Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Wherever you are, I hope you are just having absolutely glorious summer weather. I know that's what we're experiencing here in the Pacific Northwest. And nature to me has always been a tapestry of art on so many different levels. And that's what we're going to be discussing today, not nature, but art. And nature has something to do with the art that we're going to be discussing. But this show today is about a very special artist. Her name is Chunko Chodos, and her husband, Rafael Chodos, is going to be speaking with us today from California. The book has a very unique title. It's Why on Earth Does God Have to Paint? Rafael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you, Donna.
Well, when I received your book, I have to tell you, I looked at the cover, and I looked at the art, and I thought, you know, this looks something like modern art stuff, and I don't know that I'm really into it, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know how we go and we'll make judgments before we will even pursue? So that was just by the cover, and the cover does nothing to describe the story of your wife's life, and how she has evolved as a painter. And so many of my listeners are wannabe painters. They're individuals that say, wow, I want to learn how to appreciate beauty and art and so on and so forth. But art often shares a story. And I would like for you to give Junko's story. She's Japanese. And her beginnings were, you know, as a young child, it's rather horrific. Let's go into that a little bit.
She grew up in Japan. She was born in Japan and grew up during the war. And, you know, the Allies were bombing Japan during World War II. And she and her family had to flee Tokyo and hide in bomb shelters. They couldn't turn lights on at night. They'd have to draw the blinds. And so she grew up in that kind of very disrupted, frantic environment, and she had a desire to paint from her earliest years, but there was no paper available. But her father was a doctor, and he used to discard the cardboard boxes in which medicines came, and she would collect those, and using whatever she could find, rough pencils, she would draw in bomb shelters and in darkened rooms, and later as she became a teenager in her own room. And she kept her art very, very secret because she associated it with that horrific experience of being bombed and hiding. And she thought her art was something she had to hide all her life long. And late in her 20s, she moved to the United States, and she and I met and fell in love. And it was a second marriage for both of us, by the way. But we married, and she was having trouble because she didn't speak English comfortably. And living in a foreign country is not an easy matter. And out of the blue, some friend of hers from Tokyo told her that a spiritual leader that we had heard of but never met in Japan told this friend, I've seen Junko's art psychically, and God is painting through her. And Junko turned to me and looked at me and said, why on earth does God have to paint? And that question moved us both. And this book is our effort, my effort, her effort, to answer the question. It took us maybe 30 years, I'd say, to think it through. What is art? Why does God have to paint? What is it to create the world, and what is it to create a work of art?
Now, when I went through the book, because I always read material before I book my guests, I found that her story was such a powerful story, because this is a woman, like you said, as she's growing up, she's taking the papers, the paper products of boxes from her father, hiding everything. And she went very, very much against the Japanese culture
yes.
at that time. And it was very, very hard for her family, culturally, to accept the uniqueness that she displayed.
Yes.
And that caused her a great deal of challenge, but it was a spiritual journey for her on many levels.
Very much. Her sisters are both classical pianists.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I talk about in the book is the difference between being a performer and being a composer. And Junko, in her way, is a composer, the
yes,
artist
yes.
who creates.
Mm-hmm.
There's another story in the book, a part of Junko's background, an important part, that many times when the curtains had to be drawn and the lights put out, their mother would come to them with these old phonographs and play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the Ode to Joy. And she would say, I want you young girls to hear this most beautiful music that anybody's ever composed before you die. And Junko remembers listening to the Ode to Joy against the bombs exploding outside.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to herself that she wanted to create art that would have that same redemptive quality.
Now, one of the things that to me, to my eye, and for my feeling when I was looking at the art, because you have so, I mean, this book has been done just beautifully. I was intrigued the way she did composition, and I will have to tell you, some of it to me was so dark, but this is what I have observed with artists, that when they are creating, they are putting themselves in their artwork if they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she was doing. And then there were pieces that I came to that were black and white, that the detail was so meticulously done that I, when I looked at it, I went, this is the work of a master. And right now, when I open the book, I'm on the dead flowers sketch.
Yes,
and there
yes.
is a photo of that, and then the drawing of the dead flowers.
Yes.
And the detail in that is
yes.
so precise. And as I observed the art, it showed a lot of her journey as a woman, and the darkness and the fear and the anger, the pain, the confusion. A lot of that was put in there. And in these sketches, I was just astonished at her detail. One time she thought her art was actually ugly, didn't she?
Yes, for a long time she did. But when she heard these words, she started to get the idea that art might be transcendent.
Mm-hmm.
And that the viewer might experience the same journey in looking at her art that she had experienced in creating it.
Now, throughout the book, Junko is talking, and it's so eloquently stated, all of the emotions that she goes through,
mm-hmm.
when she does the dead bird, when she does the flowers. She said it represents a part of life, and it is very sensitive in its drawing and detail. Now, the interesting part of this is, although her family was so adamantly against her, and she was determined to come to the
yes.
United States, and as you mentioned earlier, the two of you met, you fell in love, you were a rabbi. Anybody from the outside looking at it would say, what in the world did the two of you ever get together for? I mean, there you are. You're indifferent. I mean, it just doesn't compute. I don't think it would work in any of these matchmaking things that you go through on the internet.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you would have been an instant reject. She would have rejected you, or something would have
right.
happened, and you never would have gotten together. But how did the two of you meet?
Well, actually, that's an easy question to answer. She happens to be the sister of my older brother's wife, former wife.
Oh, my
So we
goodness.
Were in-laws. And she came to help her older sister deliver a child. And I was visiting my brother and his wife, and we met, and that's how we got together. And we immediately felt a bond. Even though her English was halting, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
She actually was rather well-read in English and Western European materials, and has actually read things that I hadn't read. And she taught me a lot about certain authors that I didn't know about. But we got along because there's something, you know, she has a deep, deep desire to transcend ethnicity and gender and local dogma. Something universal is something she's always seeking.
Mm-hmm. And when was her art finally taken over to Japan? Because what surprised her was the emotional response by the Japanese people.
Yes, she was very surprised. People were literally sitting in front of those works and crying. Well, we married in 71, and in 73 she had her first show in Boston, and a couple years later she had shows in Tokyo. And those were her first shows, and then she had a series later. And those, by that time, she had a different conception of her art. She had already completed that Dead Flower series that you were describing, and then the next series, the Root series, made of these tiny, meticulously constructed collages,
mm-hmm.
with literally hundreds of thousands of tiny pieces of magazines picked up with tweezers and layered on the works. Sometimes it's an inch thick. And it took a year to make her biggest work in that series. And she exhibited those works in Japan, and something, you know, struck a chord there.
Mm-hmm.
But that same chord, she's developed her styles. The work she's doing right now as you and I speak is back to that detailed level again, but a lot of her works in the intervening years have been very gestural.
Mm-hmm.
She would think about them for days and days before creating them, but then they would come out in a few minutes, sometimes a series of 20 in a few days, but only after 6 months of meditating and thinking.
And that's something lots of times people don't realize, that an artist will do that. There is something that will be driving them. And Junko is a very emotional, reflective person. So she tells a story with everything that she does.
Yes.
And it's a different story to each person that views it. Now, there is a magnificent double photograph in the book called Fathom Communicating with Nature.
Where there's
a collage on mylar of computer prints.
And
each panel was 120 by 42 inches. And there's dancers. And the drama of these collages on the stage with the dancers is phenomenal.
Yes, this was just a few years ago, and she was asked to make stage sets for a dance production. Actually, the dance, the guy, the choreographer who runs the dance company, had been impressed by one of her earlier series. And he saw the earlier works, and he said, let's do a dance program, and would you please make stage backgrounds for it? And she made a series of 40 giant panels, ranging, you know, 10 feet or 12 feet high, and she put them up on the stage in sets of 4 and 7, and you're talking about the one called Communicating with Nature. It is stunning, very stunning.
That's exquisite. Now, she had some physical health challenges when she was 8 years of age.
She did.
She had tuberculosis.
She did indeed. Well, in Japan, you know, during the war, people got that kind of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't really help it. People were walking around Tokyo. Tokyo that you go to today, if you happen to go there, thriving urban metropolis, it was a burnt field when Junko remembers it. Shinjuku, that big neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And people were walking around coughing, and, you know, people got sick, and she caught it. And she had to miss school for a year, and she stayed in bed, and she had to breathe steam. I don't know what they do, but, you know, those menthol vapors.
Yes.
And she was in bed, and during that time she thought and thought, and that's a big part of her experience, and she actually has some very fantastic artworks reflecting human lungs. They are eerie.
Mm-hmm.
But they show, as all art does, I'm sure you know, and this is to me one of the most important parts of the book. It's about how art moves from the soul of the artist to the soul of the viewer. And if it doesn't start in the soul of the artist, it's not going to make it to the soul of the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
And Junko's art all comes from that place.
Now, she has a series called The Universe Moves in Humans Dance, 1984.
Yes.
And the stroke work that she did, the colors, the vibrance see.
Yes.
She's got Meditations on Dance, A Dance
yes.
in Green and Red, Five Dancing Figures, which
yes.
I just think is phenomenal.
Yes.
How big is the Five Dancing Figures? That looks like a huge piece.
It looks huge. You know, you'd be surprised that some of her works are even inside of compact disc cases. The Five Dancing Figures is not one of those, but it's not all that big. The dimensions are in the book. You're going to have to forgive me because I don't remember it offhand, but let me see if I can find them while I talk to you.
I think it's 144 by 168 inches.
Not those Five Dancing Figures. That sounds too big. Would be centimeters, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Let me take a look, and I'll see if I can find them
but
for you.
But the motion and movement that she has
yes.
in those five dancers is
yes.
amazing. There is so much detail, and you can see the faces. There is all of this usage of color that I think is extremely
yes.
intriguing.
Very much so. And, you know, she did a lot of human figure drawings, some of them in 5-second drawings, 25-second drawings. She's a master figure drawer. And then these works that you're talking about, she didn't have a model in front of her, but she wanted to paint them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that I'm having trouble finding the particular page, but I think it's about 40 inches wide by about 30 inches high.
Well, she has these cycles that she goes through.
Yes.
Every artist does. And some of her art, it reminds me of Dante's descriptions of hell, to be
yes.
frank. And you look at them and you'd say, yeah, that's what you'd want to show to someone that had had too many martinis or vodka specials, because they wouldn't drink again.
Uh-huh.
If you saw them, they'd think they were the demons from the underworld.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot there. There's the subtlety. Now, when she was when her work was shown in Tokyo for the first time,
yes.
how did her family react to the response?
Well,
what did it take for them to become aware of their very talented daughter?
Well, of course, the shows had been arranged by one of Japan's sort of artist laureates, who happened to live in the same neighborhood as Junko's parents, and in fact his granddaughter had studied piano with Junko's mother. So the families knew each other, but when he saw Junko's art, he took one look at it and picked up the phone. I was there. And called the gallery and the museum in downtown Tokyo, and he said, you have to have a show of this immediately. It was arranged about 4 months later. But the parents realized, in much the same way that I had come to realize earlier, but the parents realized then for the first time, oh, Junko has some special gift
mm-hmm.
to share with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in their credit, I will say, they immediately changed their attitude towards her and started to support her as best they could. And I was very moved by that. But in a sense, do you know what a stage mother is?
Yes.
Somebody who has a talented daughter for a pianist
right.
and wants her to become a great famous pianist. Well, Junko's parents were kind of stage parents for the sisters. And in a sense, they wanted to shovel Junko into that category, and she absolutely refused, because she had the realization that if she was going to become a performing stage artist, you know, for her parents' benefit, she couldn't really pursue the truth in her art. And I will say to their credit that they realized this whole thing and supported her the best they could once they realized what was going on.
She is a woman that thinks deeply. And in the book, Why on Earth Does God Have to Paint, the wonderful sincerity and clarity that you portray about her, about this complex person. And she hated the abuse of authority.
Mm-hmm.
She did not like repressive environments that gave no freedom. And more than anything else, she really fought against not being allowed to be who she wanted to be. And she chose to leave Japan because she said if you could not be yourself, she couldn't be herself. She wasn't going to stay there.
That's right.
And this is something that many people, I don't think, realize, that the artist, the individual that is creative, the entrepreneur, that person that wants to step outside of the mold, often is in repressive environments for the very stimulus that's going to encourage them to step out of what is repressive, to know freedom.
Yes.
And she, you know, she said, I'll quote from your book. I thought these words were very, very powerful. There are some people who leave their native land only in order to preserve their integrity and live with honesty towards themselves. One must have, after all, a certain amount of freedom to be honest as an individual.
Yes.
Without this freedom, there's no way for one to take responsibility for his or her own actions
yes.
and thoughts. Therefore, there is no inner life, no place where one experiences himself as an ethical being. Without that private place, others are merely strangers, and one is a stranger even to himself. Spiritual refugees, she describes them, and that's what she was.
She says she was a spiritual refugee, not the kind of refugee that gets kicked out of the physical home,
mm-hmm.
but a deeper kind of refugee.
Right, and she had to learn, because this was contrary to her culture. And for those of you listening, think about this, because we all have to learn this on one level or another. She had to learn how to stand up for herself. She had to confront people. She had to learn how to explain things, become persuasive,
yes.
had to learn how to convince people of the value of what she had. And that meant she had to go through a metamorphosis.
Yes.
And she
very much so. Very much so. And that, you know, one of the themes of the book is the pain of multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the sweet love of it, and it's not just the sentimental joy about we are all part of the family of man. There's also incredible work and pain involved in these dislocations.
Yes.
And when language is involved, unlike somebody, for example, it's bad enough when you come from Australia or Canada and move to the United States, but when you come from Japan, it's a whole different language, and you said it very well, that you have to learn how to assert yourself. You have to learn a different physical posture when you're standing up and conversing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big assignment, and lots of energy goes into that. And, of course, part of that is reflected in the work, because if you look at a lot of her works, I think you see a mixture of European styles and Oriental styles.
Yes, because she did a lot of study.
She did indeed. She's a very studied person.
Yes, she studied a great deal. She studied all kinds of modalities in art. In fact, one of the things that really shocked me about her story was the smearing technique that she invented
yes.
using Clorox. Who in a
Isn't that amazing?
Would use Clorox? Forget it. That removes stains, but she used it to create something else.
A different kind of surface texture.
Yes.
And she experiments a lot with techniques, as you see from the book. She must have, 25, 30 different kinds of techniques. I mean, it's not just all, like so many painters, I'm an oil painter, I'm a watercolorist.
Mm-hmm.
No, Junko has all these techniques, many of them, especially for the last 15 years, involving computers.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very sophisticated user of computers, although I confess she has to push me around as her sort of, you know, servant, slave at the terminal, because I'm the guy with a computer background. But she is really a computer thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And her adaptation of Photoshop and all the transformations of imagery that you can do in today's computers, it's very natural to her, and she's very imaginative with it.
And that is something that's creating and has created and is evolving rather dramatically, a whole new art form, the use of the computer. And this is something that I think is so intriguing about her story and all of the things relating to her growing up. She was born in 1939, you know, going through the war, seeing
mm-hmm.
horrific death around her, experiencing severe illnesses, being rejected by the family, upset. They labeled her, and all of the labels were wrong. And this journey of courage that she has taken.
Yes.
And today, when she is a mature woman, as she has accomplished so much, I mean, she has exhibitions around the world. She is married to a husband that is yourself, who is obviously very dedicated and devoted to her. And the two of you have really grown together because of her art. Where does she see herself going? Does she ever see herself teaching? Where does she see herself going?
She doesn't see herself teaching, except she speaks when invited. She's a wonderful speaker and has spoken in many, usually in university or graduate school settings. She speaks about the interface and nexus, the connection between spirituality and art,
mm-hmm.
or between what Jung called individuation and art. So she's a very profound speaker. But she's in her studio now. She's working on her newest series. I always joke with people, if she's breathing, she's painting. And she is creating what I think are her best works right now. It's a series called Mass Killings. What else is new? And it's a kind of tribute or meditation on genocide through the ages and across the globe. And these newest works, when I looked at her first one, it brought tears even to my eyes because it's so powerful. Again on Mylar, but this time with charcoal and acrylic. And this particular series, at least so far, is black and white. Like some of her other series, they start in black and white and then they blow up into Technicolor. But this one is still black and white. So she is the kind of person who keeps on seeking truth and seeking her center all the time. And I think that's just part of her life. And I think that's part of what makes her an artist. And I think that's part of what I learned from her, frankly. Because marriage, you know, like I say, it's a second marriage for both of us. We fell in love in our late 20s, 30s, and she was gorgeous, and she's still gorgeous, frankly. But marriage for us became something very special when we started thinking about art. How can we help each other with our missions in life? And I wanted to help her, and she wants to help me. And you know, I write books on many subjects, mainly philosophy and law, which is my profession. And she has helped me in my mission, and I try to help her in her mission. And I feel that this courage you describe is a very important component of married life.
I'd agree, because there's no such thing as a straight line or an even road without bumps, hills, and
That's
obstacle
right.
courses in a partnership. And she brings out some really profound realities about life, about what she saw. She has comments on fascism. And she says here, one of the most frightening realities we witnessed, and then she's speaking of the Japanese people,
yes.
was the way that seemed to be the most beautifully harmonized community revealed its weaknesses
yes.
and turned into a totalitarian community almost overnight
yes.
when it was forced to confront an unpleasant reality.
That's right.
In Japan, harmony is the most important social principle, and she said it was adopted from Confucian thought.
That's right.
And it was established in the first constitution in Japanese history in the
yes.
5th century.
Yes.
And she said the community takes care of each other. They like to be peaceful and orderly. But once the Japanese people were challenged to face certain realities and required to stand up for the truth, the fear of breaking the harmony of their little community overcame them, and they turned into the worst kind of totalitarian fascists.
Yes, isn't that something?
Community.
You know,
and that can you know, that's happened over and over again through different cultures.
Oh,
in the
yes.
world. Not just with the Japanese, but with many cultures.
Well, I'm afraid in America we confront the same thing often. I mean, we're going through a difficult time in America now.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we really responding? You
mm-hmm.
know, what are we really going to be able to do? And as the things get a little bit more stressed and a little bit more frantic, you know, we just pray that people's good natures will gain the ascendancy over their bad ones. But in Japan, like you were saying, there's this phrase, let's make everything round, maruku suru, let's make everything round. So if people have a disagreement, let's see if we can smooth it out. And that is a big, passionate desire, and when you can't do it, they go over the top there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that we're just about out of time. This book is such a powerful book, not only because of the art that is displayed in it, but the power is in the story of one woman and her husband who together have gone through a journey that has ended up enabling them to share an insight, a perceptiveness through art and through story about many realities in life. And I just think that it's so beautifully done that I was just absolutely overwhelmed. And I love the picture of her standing up on the ladder doing
yes.
the painting
yes.
from a passionate witness.
Yes.
And I just think it's spectacular. She's a little tiny person, but her spirit is as big as the universe, and her art displays it. Now, you have a website, and that is drawntothecenter.com.
All one word.
drawntothecenter.com. And there you can check out all of her art, and you may be like me. You may see one or two pieces and go, good grief, this looks like a nightmare. But you'll realize it really is a nightmare, and that's what she's trying to portray. She is giving you what she feels. And then there's other art that is absolutely amazing in detail, and her story, I think, is a story that every art student should be aware of, any person that believes in freedom, individuality, and the right of choice. Junko's story is just phenomenal. Raphael, I want to thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Donna.
It's been a joy. Raphael Chodos, the last name is spelled C-H-O-D-O-S. Junko is J-U-N-K-O-C-H-O-D-O-S. Why on earth does God have to paint? The question is answered when you read the book. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of insight, I would be delighted to do it. Here is the toll-free number. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. When you call in, I'd love to know your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax, let me share with you what I perceive, and then when I finish, you're always welcome to ask a question about anything that is of concern or interest to you. Also, if you've been having some particular unique experiences, dreams, whatever, give me a call. I'd love to help you with that. That's an area that I just find as interesting as you do. But don't be afraid to ask about information or don't be afraid to ask questions. I want to take a moment right now to thank the people who did the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. I also want to thank those of you who came out to the event and stopped by and said hello. I so enjoyed meeting so many of you, and it was a wonderful hectic 3 weekends. We felt like we were barbecuing on the first one. It got as high as 111, I learned, in temperature. And then the weekend, this past weekend, was the final one. It was just amazing. And all of the hard work, all of the support, all of the wonderful, wonderful vendors, performers, the people that made this phenomenal event a reality this year, just has just been an awesome experience, and I'm so pleased to have had the affiliation and the association with them. So make a note on your calendars for next year. If you're in the state of Washington, save those first 3 weekends in August. Keep them open because it's going to be going on again next year, the first 3 weekends in August at the Marist Farms. And I also want to thank the people of the Marist Farms because they made this all possible, and it was just a joy. Rainstorms and all, well, we thought we were going to be floating away, but it didn't happen. We were able to dry out and just had magnificent weather for each weekend. So we were so pleased that that occurred. By the way, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756. Now, a moment ago, I said if you had a question regarding psychic experiences, give me a call and ask a question. That's one thing that happened to me frequently. And when I was appearing at the Ren Fair here in Washington, people were so curious, and many of them were hesitant to ask questions because they didn't want to be laughed at. They didn't want to be made fun of. They didn't want someone telling them that the experiences that they were having were bad. In fact, I encountered an individual who had gone to someone, and they were telling them that the experiences that they were having were very, very bad, and they needed to do this, do that, do the other. And I said, well, why don't you tell me what you're going through? And this person finally broke down and was telling me some of the experiences that they were having. And they were having the experiences of ghosts. And they could be called ghosts, they could be called spirits, they could be called energies. Everybody likes to use their own particular language. And I'll use the term spirits on the other side. And they say, well, you know, I have had these experiences and I'm just terrified by them. So I said, well, why don't you tell me about these experiences? And there was this one moment not too long ago when this person was working at a desk and they looked up and they saw a figure in front of them. And they said it was spooky, no, pun not intended. And they said, I just didn't know what to do, and I froze. And I said, well, that's a perfectly normal reaction. When you've not ever seen a ghost before, you're going to have an effect on the nervous system because they're having to use your energy as an individual to be able to materialize. And this person was sitting in front of me with their eyes getting as big as saucers, and I said, you need to understand something. If there is a presence that you don't like, if there is an irritation, all you have to do is let them know you don't want to be bothered and be very firm about it. Because just like in real life, because people are on the other side doesn't mean that they're real nice people to have around. You have to remember you want to always have the attitude that you want the highest and the best in your environment. And when you become aware of spirit, of energies, that they might be there to help you in some way. Or maybe they just want to get to know you. I said, think about everyday life. How often do you walk into a grocery store or a place and you're standing in line and you strike up a conversation with someone, a perfect stranger? It's very comfortable. You may not meet that person again, but who knows? You may find that you develop a friendship. On the other hand, you may have someone that you meet that you would no more want to come into your front door than a man in the moon. Are you going to let him in? They said, of course not. I said, all right. Then you need to understand you don't allow into your space what you don't want. You take a positioning of authority with this. And that was a new concept to this person. They had the idea that they were going to be a victim of the environment that they were in. And I said, the biggest thing we have in life to become aware of are three enemies. That's ignorance, fear, and superstition. Those three companions, when they are put together in the same environment, create havoc. People who understand that like to use those components to confuse, to make you afraid. And this is something you should never be when you're dealing in the psychic area. Remember, though, that you have to take care of yourself physically. If you're in not a healthy condition, if you have addictive patternings, if emotionally you're unstable, there are things that can affect you that will make you feel disempowered. And so all of these things have to be considered, but you really, in general, don't need to be afraid. You need to be aware that many times there are those presences that will be around you to educate you, to inform you, to help you know that you're loved, that you're never alone. There's all kinds of things that can come about. And can you once in a while have a rotten apple? You sure can, but you're the one that is going to have to be decisive about it. Sometimes people's curiosity about the unknown and the ugly side of life can be very, very specific. So you just need to be aware your mind is your resource. It is this resource that will attract to you sometimes experiences that you might not ever expect that you would have. So I encourage you, if you're interested in the psychic area, if you're interested in the tools of the mind, start building a library. If you've not already acquired one, start reading, asking questions, putting yourself in environments where you come in contact with different people. You may find some people are not very talented. That's okay. Don't we have people of all levels of talent in the world in other professional environments? It's the same thing when you're dealing with the psychic area as well. So be aware, understanding knowledge is a way, and experience can be utilized to help you understand your own skills. But whatever you do, don't be afraid to ask questions. Remember, there's no such thing as a stupid question, ever. If someone puts you down for asking questions because you're curious, you need to look at that person and wonder what their agenda is. Because someone who is a good teacher will never mock you, laugh at you, or make fun of you when you ask questions. And that goes for any subject matter. Because we're all at different learning levels. And I don't care who a teacher is, they've never got it all. And that even goes for me. I'm always learning something new, and there is always new levels of understanding. Why is this the case? Because life is infinite. There are so many variables, and that should excite you. You're never, ever going to get there. Life is a journey that will bring you into so many different adventures and experiences. You need to know that they are there to serve you, to help you discover whatever is special, unique, and magical about yourself. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. A father once was checking on his teenage son, who was really struggling with his mathematical homework. And his dad went over to his son's desk, picked up a piece of paper, and quickly scribbled something on this piece of paper and put it on the bulletin board, which was above the desk of his son. And it was one word. And his son looked at it. He said, "Determination." He said, "Dad, what are you dealing with? He said, what are you putting that up on my bulletin board for?" He said, "Son, you're dealing with all of these different formulas, the X plus Y and all that kind of stuff. So I made up my own formula to encourage you, and that is using the word determination. Look it up so that you can understand it and realize that that's what it's going to take for you to be able to come to understand your mathematics." And it brought to mind a story about Dolly Parton, who is a woman I really admired. She said that when she was growing up, her high school that she went to was quite small, and during a graduation event, each of the students got a chance to stand up and announce their plans for the future. And, of course, one student said they were going to college. Another girl said she was going to get married and, you know, have her family. And she said when she had her turn, she said, I'm going to Nashville to become a star. The whole group of people laughed at her. They laughed. She said there was something about that laughter that instilled in me an even greater determination to realize my dream. She said, I might have crumbled under the hardships that I had to go through. I didn't know what they were going to be, but they hit me pretty, pretty intensely. But I would remember that crowd laughing at me. She said, sometimes life is really strange. It's interesting what we will find as inspiration to motivate ourselves. Not unlike Junko, the woman we were discussing in the first part of the show. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat with me. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Tomorrow, be prepared to not just do some toe tapping, but some real jiggling, because we're going to be doing the conga. Yes, we're going to have one of the finest drummers in the world as a guest tomorrow. King Arison is his name. He plays for Neil Diamond. He's just performed for all of the big greats in the music world. Conga Serenade is what we are going to be doing, and it is going to be a great way to just invigorate your day. And then we're going to be talking about the law of manifestation. Sometimes I get so irritated with all of the doomsdayers in the world. So by golly, the rest of us that are the doers, you got to become a little bit of a shaker. So we understand that we need to manifest. We need to be able to do things for ourselves that's going to empower us in a positioning and not having to have a fear where we're not going to be able to survive and giving our freedoms up to other people. No. Let's take another positioning. David Spangler is going to be my guest on Wednesday, and this is going to be just dynamic. David is a wonderful guy. And then we're going to be talking about a movie done by Brian Allen. It's called The Ancient Code. The Ancient Code. It is fascinating, a lot of good information, and we're going to have a chance to talk to Brian about it, and you'll know where you can get it. And then if you're an animal lover this Friday, Timothy Glass is going to be my guest. His book, Just This Side of Heaven, about a beagle, and it's a true story, The Beagle's name is Penny. I love this book. I was laughing through the book. I was crying through the book. It was just marvelous. Timothy is a man that has just a wonderful perceptiveness about animals, and this book is priceless. So we've got a great lineup of people, and I'm so glad that you're going to be able to join me and enjoy these various talented individuals. One of the things that I have found in doing this show, when I review 400 to 600 books a year, plus periodicals and other sources of material, I realize that there are so many good people in this world. And if we focus on what's not working more than what we should focus on what is working, it all depends on what we're going to give our attention to. I was watching something today about an automobile that's been designed by a Frenchman and his son that runs on compressed air. What a neat vehicle. This is phenomenal. And the son has got a generator that may one day be in the car, so that air will constantly be doing its stuff. And you won't have to stop and refill with air every 200 miles. All of this wonderful inventiveness, creativity is out there. And you're part of it. You are an involved part of life. So whether you invent something new, whether you are a caretaker, whether you're a teacher, whether you are a minister, it doesn't make any difference what you're doing. If you give it the very best you've got, if you give it from the heart and you're constantly interested and curious and you reach out to life, by Jove, you're going to be making a difference. The power of one is significant. And it all begins with each of us being personally responsible for ourselves so that we refine and develop and grow. I think of Junko, this wonderful Japanese lady that we were discussing earlier, and this powerful story. A lot of people in her circumstances might have just acquiesced and said, well, my family thinks this, I'm just going to go along with it. How many people have given up their dreams, their power of purpose, because they were criticized? How many people have walked away from opportunity because they thought they were going to fail? How many of us have said what other people think is more important than what I really feel about who I am? Well, I don't know about you, but I can say I've had my moments where I've acquiesced. But eventually I found it wasn't true, and then I had to break. And sometimes it meant that I had to leave friends, family, environments behind because it wasn't where I belonged. And our subject matter today, Junko, she went through all of that. She went through so much of this. When you talk with people who have survived wars and horrific circumstances in their lives, whether it's disease or anything else, you realize that their spirit, who they are, makes a difference because their spirit shines so brightly and they don't want to keep their light underneath and hidden. They want to bring it out. And they are finally content with themselves and who they are so that they can give the best of what they have. There is no such thing as a person who does not have value. But what's interesting is that we as individuals, again, must take the responsibility to honor and respect our skills. And what I think is phenomenal is that there are so many variations. I love the uniqueness of people. When we did the Ren Fair, all of these different costumes that people came in, designs that were just so fabulously unique. This is what you need to remember. You're the director, you're the script writer, you are the stage presence in your life. What are you going to do with what you have? What script are you going to choose to write? How do you wish to be presented on this stage of life that we live? This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow, be prepared to dance, because that's what we're going to be doing with the conga. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Don't ever turn off your light, because you're needed. And I'm so delighted you've been able to share this time with me. We'll be right back here on bbsradio.com tomorrow, station one, same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.